Captain Sandy has screwed the pooch so many times this season, I'm surprised there's not a litter of puppies running around.
Welcome to Kiki and Kibitz.
Ahoy there, mateys, and welcome to the Kiki and Kibitz Below Deck Med Podcast. My name is Brianna, and I will be your bosun today, and I am here with my chief. Wait a minute. Jen's been promoted to first officer because today our chief stew is Adrian Gang from the first season of Below Deck.
Yay! So
hello. Yes, hello and welcome.
Hi.
Welcome.
How are you doing?
Thank you.
How are you doing today?
Excellent. I'm dodging a hurricane, but I'm good.
Where are you?
Oh, that's right.
Where are you located right now?
I am in Tampa, Florida right now. So we are under semi-hurricane watch, not like buy all the toilet paper hurricane watch, but like make sure you've got enough water hurricane watch. So there wasn't any panic buying in Tampa this week, so we're good.
Does that happen with hurricanes?
Oh, yeah. All the time. All the time. Realize. What happened with COVID and toilet paper happens every hurricane season at least twice in the state of Florida.
Wow.
So
I was just going to say, I'm glad there wasn't a hurricane come. It wasn't hurricane season when COVID first started, because that would have been a nightmare for you guys.
I mean, certifiably. It would have. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. But, I mean, it was good that. I mean, it works out that way, but we might still have yet another COVID outbreak and hurricane season still happening.
Right.
So we'll see. Okay. This is like crapshoot Florida COVID bingo. Like, we just need to see. Like, I feel like I wish there was a way to fast forward like we do with commercials to 2021 and just get this over with.
Yeah, we should have put 2020 on DVR. I agree with you, because there's a whole bunch that I would have skipped over.
Same. And it just keeps 100%. Going, because I'm in California in the midst of the wildfires, and I just am like, okay, what can happen next? Like, my mom's been evacuated, her house might burn. It's like, okay, just bring it on, God.
See, you guys need the hurricane. We don't need the hurricane.
Exactly.
You need the rain.
We so do. It's really rough. Anyway, so are you still working on boats? Yachts?
Yes, ma'am.
I
just finished on Sunday. I was actually down. So they finally opened the Bahamas back up on July 1st so that private yachts and private planes, well, actually everybody, including commercial travel, was at first able to go over there. And then they changed that while I was there. So I was down in the Bahamas for a month and a half. And
how terrible.
I did. Right? I know. Well, you're isolated on a boat because we're not even allowed to get off the boat at the dock. So, I mean, rough being on the same boat in the same 130 feet for 10 days. Like, 130 feet is not as big as you think it is after 10 days.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
So I went down there as a chef and was on a boat. And then I got a call from a friend of mine who was down at Chief Stew. And he was like, I need somebody that's in the Bahamas right now. Do you know anybody that's available? My trip starts in 2 days. And I was like, I'm here. My guests leave tomorrow. If you want to come and pick me up, I'll Chief Stew it up for you for a couple of days.
Whoa.
So he drove
his
tender, his center console from Abaco to Chubb Key, which was like a 3.5 hour run, to come and get me and turn around and come right back. So I ran onto the boat, took a shower, and 2 hours later, the charter guests arrived.
That's crazy.
So you're a chef too?
So I'm a chef in real life. Yes. I've always been a chef. That's how I got into the industry. I learned the stew part. So I in my life before yachting, I used to do tour catering. And I traveled with bands on the road and I cooked for them. And I did like Rolling Stones, Aerosmith, Trans-Siberian Orchestra, Kenny Chesney, all kinds of craziness. Like, that's how I started off my 20s. My parents were excited and horrified at the same exact time.
Wow. Who knew?
But that's how I started. And then one of my tour managers contacted me and he was like, hey, I have this buddy that needs a chef for this thing. Could you do it? It's on a boat. And I was like, boat, cook, sure. That sounds fun.
Sure.
I 15 agree. Years ago, still
so
here.
So if somebody offered you your pick of positions, like they say, I have a chef position or I have a chief stew position, what is your gut to go to first?
Chef, hands down, all the time, any day. I discovered through my adventuring in being a chief stew that I just don't personally possess the level of anal retention that is required for that job on a perpetual basis. It's hard, and it's a lot of just eating shit constantly. And I do that in a different way with food, but it's a very different attitude. People clap when I come to the table after a meal. Like, right, that doesn't happen to the chief stews.
Right.
You know, nobody applauds the engineer to be like, thank you for making this dinner today. You know what I mean? It's not customary for that to happen. And I'm not saying I do it because of the gratitude, but I do it because of the gratitude. Because I love what I do, and yeah, I love it when people appreciate how hard I work to make their food good for their trips. And honestly, it's out of all of the positions on the boat, the chef is by far the most pressure, besides the captain not hitting things when they're driving. Because if the weather is terrible and we can't leave the dock, if there's some kind of an electrical or mechanical issue, if we can't play with the toys because the weather is crappy, the food can save a trip.
Right.
It just has to be really good. So that pressure mounts on when other things on the boat are going wrong. And a lot of people don't think about this, but if you have a guy or a girl who is an amazing chef in, let's say, an Italian restaurant, if you pluck them out of that Italian restaurant and put them in a French restaurant or an Indian restaurant or a Thai restaurant, they're going to flounder if they have no experience, because their specialty is Italian. Mm-hmm. I have to be special at everything.
Right.
I have to be an expert at everything. And I've been on charters before where I know that there's another trip coming on 2 days after these people leave, and they want a full-on traditional Hungarian week of food. And I go, what in the hell am I going to do?
Like Kiko with Vegas food. Poor thing has to Google.
Dude.
What is Las Vegas?
And I Google my face off to figure it out. The fact that Sandy said that she doesn't have chefs that Google things, it's impossible to know everything. It's impossible.
Of course.
Yeah. Unless you're doing like a Leon beef cheeks where it's your signature recipe and you've done it a million times, you have to be able to look at recipes for all of these cuisines. There's no way to know it all.
There's no way to know it all. There's no way to keep that all in your head all at once. I have an iPad that helps me, like you would not believe, and I've got all kinds of different stuff downloaded on there. So no matter where I am, if I don't have Wi-Fi, I have access to things. But that doesn't mean people don't throw me for a loop sometimes.
Right.
And by the end of that week, I was an expert in traditional Hungarian cuisine. It is the ugliest food I've ever seen, but it's delicious.
Yeah, it is. Food of my people, my ancestors.
It's not attractive, but it's good. It's good.
I agree with you on both counts. So on your time on Below Deck, and of course, you were season one, so you created this thing, which has become monstrous. It's like the most popular show on Bravo, right? This franchise.
It is. So I didn't, just for clarification, I didn't create it. This was
No, but you gave so much character to it. You were the first.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I meant.
Absolutely. Which was hard. Rebecca Henning was the woman who came up with the idea, and she was down in St. Martin on vacation with her husband, who's Doug, who's also amazing. And they were out at a bar, and one of my girlfriends was out at a bar, and she was with her crew after a charter, and they all had their boat shirts on, which you're not supposed to do anymore. And Rebecca walked up to my friend and said, hey, I'm in reality TV. I have this idea to do a show about yachting. What do you think? And my friend said, I think it's a great idea. I want nothing to do with it. Call my friend Adrian.
That's so funny.
Within the industry, have been having this conversation for a very long time, like since reality shows became a thing, because we know it's interesting. We mm-hmm. know that the guests are interesting. We know that the crew is interesting. Like, it's not even a question of whether it would make good TV. We knew it.
Right. It's like it's like nautical Downton Abbey. You're like seeing what's going on downstairs versus upstairs and all these crazy rich people upstairs that you want to kill.
Absolutely. And it's a very cool concept, but it's also real.
Right.
And I think that's what makes it so much more relatable, because I'm not going to ever know what it's like to be a rich housewife of New Jersey.
Right.
I have utterly no goals of ever finding out what that is like. But how many hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions of people in the country or the world, are in hospitality that can relate to the things that we go through to a lesser degree, because they don't have to sleep, you know, 40 feet away from these people for a week. Mm-hmm. But what we do is really relatable. And I think that's why the show has been such a huge success, because you want us to overcome these hurdles. Like, as an audience, and now I'm in the position where I'm watching it for entertainment, and I'm like, God, I don't want Bugsy to fail. This is such a shit show, but I really don't want her to fail.
Right.
You know, because I've been there. Right. I've been the person that's like, oh, crap, this is my job now, you know, and I don't want to see her flounder, because I know that she's capable, but it's also super high stress, and you've got cameras, and you're getting new guests every 3 days, which is abnormal.
How real is it, though? Is what we see on screen, is that really what's happening? How much influence does the edit have on our impression of what's going on?
I mean, the editing has a lot to do with it, because how many hours of the day is there boring things happening? Like, how many times can you watch those second and third stews make a bed? Like, that's, but they're still doing the job. I've heard rumors, people have said, especially on Reddit and stuff, that there's a whole second crew that really does the work. I'm like, no, bitch. I mean to tell you that we did the work. We do our work. It's one of those things where there's just not enough room for extra people in the first place. It's only 160 feet long, and that sounds massive to a lot of people, but when you have 11 crew, because you're including the chief officer and the engineer, who you barely see on TV, but they're there for the mechanics of the boat and for the insurance and for the peace of mind of the owner. You don't really see them, but they're there. So there's 11 crew all the time. And then you have at least 6 guests, usually 8. And then you have another 10 or 15 camera crew and producers on board all the time.
Oh, wow.
160 feet is not a lot of room to move.
No.
So, you know, it's what you see happens. Here's what I tell people. So I have a lot of people contact me that are interested in going on the show. And once they start to get through the interview process, they contact me and they're like, is there anything I really need to know? And usually my biggest advice is just stay sober for 6 weeks.
Right.
And you'll be fine.
Why? Yeah,
just stay sober.
Why?
Because I feel like that's when a majority of the people start to look like assholes on the show, is when that's when a lot of the stuff starts to happen, and that's when a lot of the tension begins to happen. But if you want to maintain a decent reputation and work in the yachting industry afterwards, and that's what you're worried about, is getting jobs after the show, then just don't be a drunken monkey.
Right.
The end. Like, yeah. You're still going to have interpersonal conflict, and that's normal in any working environment. So the unrealistic part of the show is that, you know, normally in a yachting environment, you hire people that will synergize, that will work really well together. And for the purposes of reality TV, that does not work. You know, in a normal hiring situation, captain hires senior crew vets out their junior crew. Sometimes the captain will have input. Sometimes the captain will choose. But for the most part, the captain is looking at synergy. Mm-hmm. And if we had that, if everybody knew what they were doing and they did it on the show, there wouldn't be a show to watch.
Right. So in real life, do you not, because the inspiration I thought for the show was that the drama happens naturally. So you don't think enough drama happens naturally, and that's why they do it? I just want to make sure I'm following.
In my 15 years of yachting, I can tell you that all of the things that you see mm-hmm. have happened at some point along my career.
Okay.
If all of those things happened in the same 6 week span of time, I would not be doing this. I'd be in a mental institution because there's That's no perfect. Way to keep up with that.
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's no way to keep up with that. It's, they choose personalities. We did a very long psych eval. We had to sit down with a professional psychiatrist and we had to do a written exam because here's this, it's a liability issue. They want to make sure that you, despite the fact that you will be pushed on a multitude of levels, they want to make sure that you're not going to snap and hurt yourself or someone else because that's right. a liability.
Interesting.
And so they want to know what your threshold of pain is so that they can get you to that point and then stop.
And then because stop they and don't not want push you, to... you over. Exactly.
So they put right. you under like want... a light and start interrogating you and threatening to pull your fingernails out. And if you survive that, they let you on. Is that what you're saying?
They just put somebody in front of me with a bag of food and make them eat it in front of me and see how long stay there.
That's hilarious. Yeah, that's no, funny.
When you look back at your time on Below Deck, what is your overall feeling about it? Is it positive? Is it negative?
Sorry. No, I'm saying filming. If we're talking about the actual filming, it was a nightmare. It was mm-hmm. it was absolute torture. So I worked on that project for almost 3 years before we started filming. So from the time that I had my first conversation with Rebecca to the time that my show actually aired, it was almost exactly 4 years.
Wow.
So I had been in front of this project for a long time, trying to do legwork and find uniform sponsors. And because I was the only person in Fort Lauderdale and this show didn't have a budget. So I was going to crew agents and uniform companies, and I was there like boots on the ground to try to get a lot of things networked and see if we could get some sponsorship to be able to offset the cost of some of the things that they would have to pay for the boat, right?
Wait, so you helped develop the show?
I didn't write the treatment for it, but I filmed the teaser for it.
Wow.
So the teaser, the sizzle reel that we sold to Bravo, we pitched it to E!, Bravo, MTV, and VH1. And I told the producers that if we sold it to MTV or VH1, I was going to paddle as far and as fast the opposite direction in my tiny little douche canoe as I possibly could. Get me away from that. But E! And Bravo made sense mm-hmm. for what we were doing.
Right.
So Bravo's the one that ended up getting the show. And then it took us another little while to set up all the logistics of that, which I helped them with. And then... you know, the boat that we had, which is actually in real life, is called Coeur de Lion.
It was now, the honor. It was then,
honor.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was honor for the show. Mm-hmm. Was very bland on the interior. It was all like cream colored everything and like khaki colored couches. It was super neutral and it's really bad for camera. Oh, so mm-hmm. they called me and they said, we're going to send you some cash. Go look at the boat. And then go buy some stuff at Ross and Marshall's to like zhuzh it up a little bit because it's so boring that we need some like color in there. So I went and looked at the boat and walked around and went, okay, we need some stuff here, like pillows and blankets and, you know, interesting. I didn't have enough money to do table decor. Actually, that boat was not super stocked on, so I didn't do tablescapes. Like that wasn't my thing right. because we didn't have a lot to choose from and we didn't have a budget for it. We also very clearly didn't have a budget for good uniforms because they were terrible.
They were pretty bad.
They were pretty bad.
They were so bad.
Baby blue and the, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I had no idea you helped develop the show. And I just want to congratulate you because I know it's one of the very top shows or the top show in Bravo, right?
And can I just interject really quick? I've already been over the past couple of weeks since I first caught your Reddit article. I started rewatching your season because I, like everybody else, I was talking to Brianna about this earlier today. There's an odd thing that happens with memory to where how everybody else reacted to it ends up influencing how you think about it. And I went back and watched your season again, and I'm just like, why did I have such a problem with her? And now that I know all the effort that you put into it. And since we've been talking, I'm even more upset at how dirty they did you in the whole thing. And I just want to say that anybody who has reservations, I implore you to go back and rewatch the season and tell me if, with fresh eyes, now that we've seen seasons upon seasons of this, if it was really as outlandish as your memory has made it. Because I am being completely honest here with, I ate humble pie and I apologized to Adrian because I was like, I'm sorry that I said things in my head. And I wasn't even on social media. So there was nothing.
Why are you
that she could have?
I can't believe you're admitting this, but you don't have to.
Because I'm from Ohio. We're just, we're completely honest about everything, you know, and I didn't want to, I like authenticity. So I don't know.
Fair.
Anyway,
that's fair. And I feel the same way. Look, I by no means was I perfect on my season. Mm-hmm. And what I will explain a little bit is that I had invested so much time and effort with everybody in my industry telling me it was a terrible idea and it's never going to go anywhere and it's going to destroy the yachting industry. I love the people in my industry, after my tiny little TV show came out, told me that my little TV show was going to be the downfall of the multi-billion dollar yachting industry. You mean to tell me that billionaires are going to stop vacationing on their yachts in the Caribbean because I have a TV show? Thank you for thinking I have that much power. You're
no
a moron.
No kidding. If anything, it makes insanity. Other people want to go on. It's like
100%. The charter industry is through the roof because there's a whole audience of people who've never even thought about chartering a yacht that do it now, especially from the Midwest. Because how often do they see a yacht?
Yeah,
but
never.
They've got money,
right?
You know, and that's the thing. There are some negative aspects of it, and I understand where some people are coming from because the owner goes, "Well, my crew doesn't sit in the hot tub when I'm not on board, right?" And I'm thinking about it like, who cares? Right. As long as it's still in working order when you get back on board, they're the ones that have to clean that thing anyway. Like, does it really matter to you? It's one thing to have the crew fornicating on your bed sheets.
Yeah.
It's a totally different thing to let somebody use your hot tub. And by the way, if you charter your boat, charter guests are probably having sex in your hot tub anyway. So who cares if it's the crew or if it's the charter guest?
Mm-hmm.
To be honest, like, it's bodies with fluids. It's going to happen. You know what I mean? Like, oh, it's just, God. You're dumb. If you think that doesn't happen on your boat, and if you're uptight about it, then you shouldn't own a boat that other people manage for you.
Never going in a boat hot tub ever again. Never.
Ever, ever
again. You just ruined it for me.
Ever, ever again.
Thanks a lot.
That's funny. Before we get too far off, I wanted to bring it back to what actually drew my attention back to you again, and that was your Reddit threads that you were doing. And you gave me, Brianna and I both were searching like dogs to find, you know, this whole maritime law, this vague.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
We were researching because we don't like to put things out there that we don't know our facts. And so we tried so hard, and yours was the first source I found that had, you know, the real information that could help us out. So I just wanted to know if you would mind just sharing with the listeners a little bit about some of the things that you want to clarify that were on the show that aren't really necessarily real.
Yes, and if anyone missed it, I just want to make sure we point out that what we're talking about is Hannah getting fired from the Wellington because she had Valium in her cabin that the captain didn't know about and wasn't dispensing. So we want to know, what is the actual law about this? And frankly, Adrian is the only person we have found who actually knows.
Well, I will preface this by saying I don't know all the answers to that, but I have done a ton of homework on it because honestly, it's not a vigilante issue. I genuinely wanted to know because I've been doing this for 15 years and there's all of a sudden televised rules I've never heard of that are supposedly universal in the yachting industry. So if you find something, literature, a book, a poster, some kind of toilet paper that has it printed on it that says this is maritime law, you're going to find that documentation in the same place that you find the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus and the Tooth Fairy and unicorns, because it doesn't exist. There's no such thing as a universal maritime law. There are a multitude of governing bodies like the U.S. Coast Guard or the MCA, which is the Marine Coast Guard, Marine and Coast Guard Agency out of UK. It's also one of the regulating bodies that manages a lot of the rules and regulations for commercial vessels. And a lot of the larger boats like the Wellington are rated because of their tonnage, which means the weight of the boat. They're rated commercial because of the weight of the boat. So once it gets over a certain weight, you have to rate it commercial, and then certain standards kick in. Like if you see a 75 Sunseeker or a 45 foot cabin cruiser, they're not held to the same standards that a boat like the Wellington is, because there's a lot more liability, there's a lot more moving bodies, and there's a lot more damage that can be done. They also can travel much further than a small boat with its fuel capacity. So there's a bunch of different governing bodies, and it depends on where the boat is registered. Like the Wellington is registered in the flag state of Malta. So they have to follow the regulations that come from Malta as the governing body that the boat is registered to. There's a lot of boats that are, for the purposes of tax reasons, registered to Jamaica or the Cayman Islands or Marshall Islands. So these boats might not actually ever go to any of those places, but their registry is paid through to avoid paying taxes in the U.S. So they're considered internationally flagged boats. They're still subject to the laws and regulations of the U.S. Coast Guard when they're in U.S. waters. So there's a couple different things that come into play. The Wellington is a Malta-flagged boat, so its registry, they have to follow their rules or they lose their registry. They're in Spain, so they are subject to the laws of the waters they're in. So if let's just use pot. If pot is illegal in Spain, even though the boat is registered in a different country, it's still illegal on the boat because you're in the waters of Spain.
Okay.
So there is no one specific document that is maritime law. There are thousands of documents that are maritime law. And I have had this conversation, so I don't typically anymore work on boats that are over 130 feet. My happy place is under 130 feet because it's a lot of crew bullshit and I don't like it.
Right.
And I prefer to stay in my happy place. And the boats that are run by friends of mine that are captains of boats that size, so like 150 and over, I've had a lot of conversations with. And I said, do you do XYZ? Because it in 15 years of yachting, and working on boats that size at several different points in my career, I've never had a captain keep my prescriptions. I've never even had them ask me.
Really?
When I go on board a vessel, because I freelance, so I'm not on a boat permanently. I freelance. So every time I get onto a new boat, I walk up to the captain and I tell them that I'm allergic to opiates. So if something happens to me and I am, you know, in a medical situation where somebody needs to administer painkillers to me, they need to know I can't have opiates because I will die. And I tell them that I have a shellfish allergy, and it ranges from mild to severe, but I do have an EpiPen, and I show them where it is, and sometimes I leave it up in the bridge because I want them to be able to find it in a hurry. I want everybody to know where it is.
Makes sense.
Because I'm not going to carry it in my pocket with me all day, every day. But if it's in one central location and everybody knows where it is and I go into anaphylaxis, I want somebody to go get it and bring it to me.
Right. So are you saying Sandy's full of shit? Is Sandy totally full of shit? Is that how she's justifying it? Or could that possibly be the rules of her boat or whatever?
In the experience of a majority of the people that I know in this industry that run boats similar to Sandy's, that is not what happened. She is not a medically trained professional. She is not qualified to decide when somebody should be able to self-medicate or self-administer medication. I understand from a legal standpoint why, if you have a crew member that is on board your boat that gets injured and has to take painkillers, first of all, that crew member should be in a hotel room recovering, because if they have to be on painkillers that are so strong that it impairs their ability to do that, or if they're on painkillers that strong, they should be recovering. They shouldn't be trying to do their job.
Right.
But in the event that you have a crew member on board who is injured, who is taking painkillers that could impair their job, I see why it would be reasonable for a captain to ration that out so that it's not possible for any other crew members to just abuse it. You know what I mean? Because that's an easy thing to do. Right. I understand with that logic. But when you're talking about a medication that is on an as-needed basis, like an EpiPen or a Valium, because you don't take Valium all the time. You take it when you need it, when you have anxiety, when you have an attack. Right. And if it's inaccessible because it's in the captain's safe and they're the ones that are supposed to be doling out to you, what happens if I go into anaphylaxis and the captain is off the boat doing something?
Right.
I die.
Exactly.
The rule is that the captain is a medically trained professional and capable of deciding when I should self-administer my medication. That's insanity. Mm-hmm. It's dumb. Right. I have spoken to captains that do take the initiative with their permanent crew to find out what health concerns may be in case something happens. I do know captains who have said, I do want to know the medications that they're on, because if they have an adverse reaction and something happens and I have to have paramedics come to the boat, I want to be able to tell them this might be it. By the way, this is in the person's system because something else could interact negatively with that.
Right.
And that makes sense to me.
Totally.
But none of them said it was a requirement.
Right.
Also, none of them purported to be medically trained doctors that know enough about a multitude of prescriptions. If Sandy, if what Sandy is saying is true, that she should be the one to dole out prescriptions, then she would legitimately spend her entire time on that boat being a pharmacist, not a captain.
In your experience, even while you were on the show, you've worked with someone who had an anxiety issue. We saw on the show that Kat had taken medication, and we saw Captain Lee just need to see that she was doing it. So do you think that it makes sense what Sandy was saying, that you can't be on a ship and work and do your job if you have anxiety?
No. And that's something that's really important for me to clear up. I've had a lot of people reach out to me in the last couple of weeks and ask me if certain medical conditions would preclude them from being eligible to work on a yacht. I had a young kid who reached out to me and said, I saw a show, I've been inspired, I've done my research to figure out my classes and what I need to take and how much I need to save up at my summer job, but I have type 1 diabetes. I still run a boat.
Oh, wow.
Because I have to take medicine every day. And I said, to my knowledge, you absolutely can still work on a boat. He goes, I just want to make sure that the fact that I have to take medication every day doesn't stop me from being able to work on a boat. And I was like, I take birth control every day. Yeah. It doesn't stop me from working on a boat. You know, I think it's like, I know for a fact that people who suffer from epilepsy are not mm-hmm. able to work on boats because that could happen at any point in time. You could fall overboard and drown. It does make sense. I don't see anxiety attacks. I mean, I personally have never had one, but I've never seen them be so debilitating that you could accidentally fall overboard. Right. I could see how maybe in the midst of a fire or something like that, it could cause or present some type of a issue, but I know lots of people in the yachting industry, and I know plenty of people that have anxiety, and there's never been an issue.
And I think that's why Brianna and I have like laser focused so much on this, is because in you're confirming there are real world ramifications to what Sandy has put out there. In people thinking they can't do something now because of how she's characterized it. And I know we've personally had a huge response from anxiety and depression sufferers who take the same or a similar prescription as Hannah. And her characterization of it, like it's a narcotic and calling it drugs instead of a medication or a prescription, really sets mental health back, in my opinion.
Yeah,
and there's already a stigma around it. Yep. You know, I had my own issues when I was diagnosed with the stigma of it. I don't want that for my kids' generation, for my grandkids' generation. I want this done and over. And that's part of why I want Sandy to educate herself. You know, and I really don't want to see her just canned. I mean, she's getting to a point where I want to see her canned now. You know, that puppy video was too much.
Like she mm-hmm. was saying, doing drugs. That's mm-hmm. not okay to say doing drugs when it's a prescription medicine. Come the hell on. That's pejorative.
100%. So there's a whole bunch of things that you just said all in a row that I'd love to address, and I might miss a thing or two. But first and foremost, yes, the stigmatization is a problem. Mm-hmm. And you have been very delicate with the words that you chose to describe how you felt about Sandy and the way that she handled this, but I'm just going to mm-hmm. be outright with it.
Okay.
I'm horrified. I'm mm-hmm. disappointed. Mm-hmm. And I am flabbergasted at her lack of sensitivity considering her background that we all know about. It's not a mm-hmm. surprise that she was an alcoholic. You know, it's none of that stuff is a surprise. That's all out in the open. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. Mm-hmm. To have someone who has gone through their own massive level of stigmatization speak that insensitively about something that very much should be taken with seriousness and thought and not gossip and not any kind of, it doesn't have anything to do with maritime law. Mm-hmm. It has everything to do with normal human morals and ethics and the way that you handle things in a workplace. Right. And it's on every normal, like people start throwing out HIPAA laws and shit like that. And that unfortunately doesn't matter because you're not in the US mm-hmm. and you're not on a U.S. flagged boat. So none of that shit matters.
Also, applies only to doctors and medical clinics. I looked that one up too. It's not, that doesn't apply to other people. Although I was
right. Like, but I had everybody throwing the book at me my season because of what happened with Kat, because they thought that I outed her for mental illness. And that mm-hmm. is not what happened. I went to her in front of a witness and I said, everybody saw your behavior last night. This should not be a surprise. You have the opportunity to go to the captain and explain to him what happened yourself, or I will. Mm-hmm. And I said, I know you were drinking. Mm-hmm. There's no point in lying to me about it. I wanted somebody else to be there for the conversation. People are like, I can't believe you had that medically confidential conversation in front of another one of her coworkers. And I was like, look, I'm going to have this conversation in front of someone else so that my words cannot be used against me later.
And that's smart. You know,
everybody saw what you did. Everybody mm-hmm. saw what you did mm-hmm. in front of God and everybody. You told CJ you wanted to have sex with him. You talked about your boobs for half an hour on camera. Like everybody saw it. Everybody mm-hmm. knows what's going on now. Right. You have to go explain yourself to the guy that can throw you off this boat if he deems necessary. And so I gave her that opportunity because it's not my place if she chooses to own her behavior, which she very well did. She lied through her teeth, and we all know that now, because she admitted on the reunion that she was drinking at the same time. Right. And that's a huge no-no. Whether you're on land or on a boat, taking that medication and drinking at the same time causes exactly the shit show that you saw that was Kat that night.
Mm-hmm. Well, and she also said she took more than what she normally took, because I did rewatch that episode recently, and she did say, you know, that she took more than she usually does. So I don't know if she usually took a half and she took a whole, or she took two. I don't know. I can't get into that specifics, but she did admit to it. So in that, I see as a safety issue. If Hannah was behaving that way, I would understand Sandy's point.
Right.
But there wasn't any of that. And I don't like having Hannah's, you know, mental health issues being used as Sandy's way to finally get Hannah off the show. And
I feel like if it had been a different story, if it had been, okay, Hannah, you don't have your prescription, but we know you've had this in the past. Like, really, you should have a prescription, slap on the wrist. But by the way, this pot pen thing you've got going on. And I don't ever remember them saying CBD. Mm-hmm. On the show at any point.
On TV, they didn't.
Yeah. No, Sandy kept
it was referred to a multitude of times as a pot pen. And regardless of whether if CBD is still illegal in Spain, then it's illegal. Right. Then that's an issue. And that's something that can be held against the captain and her license. And I understand that. But that is not why Sandy said she fired Hannah.
Exactly.
And all of the insensitive shit she said and did thereafter makes this what is so egregious. That's what I have an issue with. And, you know, Sandy chasing her down the dock and saying, but I care about you, but I care about you. And Hannah's just like, get out of my face, lady.
Yeah.
And BS. And then Sandy retorts back with, fine, fucking I don't care. Fuck you.
I know. I was like, okay, you just revealed who you really are. You were just totally fake. If you can change in 1 second because you don't understand someone is so hurt and embarrassed that they cannot confront you directly at this time, then you're just, you know, that was lame. Super lame.
It makes you wonder.
It does.
I'm disappointed. I'll tell you what. I have loved watching Sandy for a long time. I'm not saying she's perfect. I'm not saying I'm perfect. Yeah. But I've very much enjoyed watching Sandy this entire time. Damn. This season.
You don't know this, but I bought Brianna a cameo to celebrate us doing this podcast because she was such a huge Captain Sandy fan. And so we had the same feeling, you know. We like the, you know, powerful women in power theme of this season, and we were so pumped about doing this, and it's just turned into
such a fecal fest.
It's horrible.
I know. Hey, so since Adrian, not to move on, but like I also want to talk about some more fun stuff, like how much I hate
Tom. Sure.
Because you were a chef, and it just occurred to me, like, I'm on this. I already hate Tom for no reason, but this episode, I felt like I had a reason. Tell me about Tom and your feelings about that, since you're actually a chef.
I feel like Tom, after this last episode, should most definitely take that sous vide machine and throw it overboard and float test it, because clearly it is not helping his case here. Like, sure. I get that he is, you know, tried the same thing that just happened to me a couple of weeks ago, where I showed up on the boat 2 hours before the guests did to try to give myself an orientation. Like, I didn't even know where the silverware was. Mm-hmm. You know, to like, thank God I had a second Sue on that boat who could show me where everything was, because she had been there for a little while. But it's not out of the realm of possibility that you get thrown into fire, and that's what happened to him, and that it happens.
Right.
So you just adapt. And I feel like he, from what I have seen so far, I can't gauge whether he's a good chef or not, because I haven't seen enough of it. I think he probably has his go-to dishes and his things that normally work with a certain clientele, and maybe those things were just a miss on this trip because he's used to something different. I'm not sure.
But what about his meltdown?
That's my thought.
Like he just looks like amateur hour, the way he's just melting down. What's your feeling about that? Is it as bad as it looks, or is that sort of a logical reaction that when caught on camera just looks bad?
Everybody has their moments. Mm-hmm. I feel like that might be one of the most dramatic things that happened on this episode, because last week was such a shell shocker that they had to do something to make it interesting, because otherwise this entire episode would have been like, meh.
You and know? I think he's hyper aware of the cameras too. I think he's looking, how you were talking before about this can affect your career in the future once you're not on Below Deck. I think that's forefront in his mind right now.
Oh, of course. And I feel for him in that way, because I love what I do. I love being a chef and I love making people happy with food. I'm not entirely sure that I ever would have wanted to be the chef on the show. Initially, the conversation was that I was going to be the chef, but we were also supposed to have a smaller boat and Alex was going to be the captain.
Really?
And oh yeah. Alex was supposed to be the captain our first season, but because they realized they didn't have enough space for the camera crew and everybody else, we had to get a bigger boat, and then we ended up with Lee. Lee was accidental. That was not on purpose.
Yeah, that was in Captain Lee's book, I think.
Yeah.
Because Alex wasn't licensed for that large of a ship, for the honor size ship, right?
Correct. He didn't have the right tonnage license to be able to drive that boat, so... Yeah, I haven't read the book, but Alex was supposed to be the captain and it ended up being Lee instead. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, for what it's worth, I'm grateful that I didn't have the opportunity to shoot myself in the foot as a chef on the show, because I enjoy what I do too much to have that level of pressure added to what I already do.
Yeah, it's
interesting. You know, so being the chief stew, they wanted me in front of the guests. They wanted me to be the liaison from the crew to the guests, and that ended up working for them ultimately. Not so much for me, by the way, but very much for them. So
just as a viewer and a fan, do you think Malia being like right on top of him and like pretending like she's a sous chef now, do you find that as annoying as I do?
Yes. mostly because I think she's trying to do damage control, because if he loses his shit, she looks like an idiot for bringing it up in the first place. Yeah.
That's a good point.
So she's invested in the fact that he doesn't lose his fucking mind and go bananas and start chucking huevos rancheros at people, you know what I mean? Like
huevos rancheros.
Yeah, she called it
quavos. And then Quieros Ranchero. Yep. Laughing. But yeah, she's annoying, right? And we didn't even ask you about your feelings about her taking that picture out of Hannah's bag. What about that? I wish I remembered to bring that up earlier.
If that's what happened, if in fact all that entire sequence of events is what happened, Malia rooted through Hannah's stuff after they got into an argument about the bunking situation, and Malia sent a picture to Sandy to like rat out a roommate. First of all, that's illegal because Malia doesn't possess the authority to do a search and seizure. Only the master of the vessel does, or in the absence of the master, the first officer or like a senior member. So definitely not Malia at any point. Everybody else has to die in a fiery plane crash before Malia is allowed to do this. the master of the vessel is the one who's supposed to perform a search and seizure. If there is reasonable suspicion, or some people say probable cause, but if there is reasonable suspicion that an abuse has taken place of some kind, or contraband is in the possession of a crew member, and the captain has to have a witness, meaning one of the senior officers has to be there to make sure that the contraband wasn't planted. And none of that shit happened. So if Sandy said to Malia, go make sure that, I don't think that happened. I don't think, knowing that Sandy has had experience with Hannah in the past, and she knows that Hannah has anxiety and has a medication for it, because that's come up in the past, It doesn't make sense to me that Sandy would say to Malia, go check her stuff and make sure that she doesn't have mm-hmm. a prescription, you okay. know, without a tag on it or yeah. whatever. I think Malia did that on her own. Mm-hmm. And I think she did it out of spite. Mm-hmm. And maybe it was something that she had seen previously that now she wanted to use to her advantage, which was malicious.
Right.
Which is funny to me that her name is Malia. And
Malia. The word is malicious. Anyway. look at the word anyway. Roots.
Yeah. So,
yeah, she's horrific. I mean, that was just, that. Speaking of women who have let us down, we're so excited about female captain, now I'm all bled down. It hurts me mm-hmm. deep inside. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Same girl, same.
Another woman from this episode that let me down was the lovely guest who decided to bend over a set of rocks.
Oh, my God.
What the heck was that about, you guys? I want to get into some fan stuff right now, like a viewer opinion.
There's not enough pixelation that can get rid of that.
So wrong.
That was really bad.
Can I tell you something that absolutely flabbergasted me?
Please. Mm-hmm.
It's not like these people haven't at least watched an episode to know that everything is fair game to behave right. themselves even a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, production doesn't make you get drunk and act like an asshole. I had this issue with one of the charter guests on my first season mm-hmm. that the charter guest was so upset about the way that they were portrayed on the show. I'm not going to tell you which one.
Right.
And I was in a three-way call with the charter guest, the production company, and myself, because mm-hmm. he had maintained contact with me, and it wasn't Simon, so mm-hmm. don't get it twisted.
Okay.
it was another charter guest. It was a different group. Mm-hmm. And this person contacted me and was like, I can't believe that they made us look cheap and they made us look like self-absorbed assholes and da 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 da. And I was like, I mean, I'll put you in touch with the producers if you want to, but I don't know what to tell you. Thanks. And what ended up happening is that one of the producers came on the phone during this three-way call, and he goes, sir, did we tell you what to say? And the charter guest said no. He goes, did we tell you what to do? And then charter guest was like, well, no, you didn't. He goes, then if you look like an asshole, it's because you're an asshole.
Oh, my God.
We didn't do that to you.
Oh, my God.
Hashtag truth. I mean, those things would never happen in my life. You couldn't pay me enough. I would not find that good. Like, there's no world in which I would do that or Jen would do that, you know? No. We don't have it in us.
I'm not saying that I don't have the capacity to at some point or any point or even any not so recent point be a drunken asshole. But
neither, like right now.
Fully know that there is a right to fully know that there is a camera crew of people following right. you and you're paying mm-hmm. for it.
Mm-hmm.
You're just an asshole.
Right.
Totally agree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I didn't raise
so
it
am
right.
I shocked?
Right.
No. Am I shocked that Bravo found charter clients that would act that way on camera for sensationalism? Absolutely not.
Hell no. So have you had outrageous people like that when you're not on camera? Like, is this a thing that happens or is it just cast that way?
I'm going to say one phrase that mm-hmm. is a almost solid rule in the yachting world that it's not written down anywhere. It's definitely not in the fictitious maritime law book. Never do a Russian charter. Never. Okay. Because it's the most obscene, ridiculous, awful, filthy, mostly illegal things you've what? Ever seen. Like, makes R. Kelly look like a Catholic school kind of
okay.
shit.
What?
That's crazy.
Oh my God.
Okay, we'll have to talk off air about
that. No, that's interesting though. That's super interesting. But would you say it's as common as they make it look on? Well, that's a dumb question. Of course it isn't. There's no way.
Mm-mm.
No, but these guests, like, they had that vibe too. The one guy was showing off his wife's boob and the other guy was rating everybody's boobs. I like your
why?
Boobs. Like, yeah, it's just
I mean,
gross.
Do that in front of your friends at your house with your whatever. Like, why are you doing that on national television? Why is that? Unless it's the same situation with Kat, where she invested a lot of money in those things and wants to make sure everybody sees them and she gets the most money out of them.
That's funny.
Okay. But did he buy her asshole? Because when she bent over like that, I feel certain that was like original parts.
I don't even want to call back the memory, you guys. It was so wrong. Yeah. I mean, they had already damaged me.
Let's just end this part of the conversation with everybody, you, me, God, and everybody. We're all horrified.
Absolutely. I was also horrified. I keep getting my hopes up and my expectations up for Sandy to like at some point do the right thing and like show me the Sandy I knew. When I had a real problem when Malia called both Pete and Rob effers, and then they go down into the galley and Rob tries to address it from her to her in front of Sandy. And I was expecting, I have these expectations for Sandy to, in the moment, show me a glimmer of who I used to admire. And she did absolutely nothing. Rob said what Malia had called him, said how it made him feel. And Sandy didn't, you know, even though two episodes ago she told Malia she can't be emotional, you know, she didn't reprimand her at all and actually doubled down and called him insubordinate. So
it's really obnoxious.
Yeah. I'm having problems. You know, do I give up my expectations?
Again, nobody's perfect. Sandy's not perfect. I'm not perfect. Nobody's perfect. But this feels like the Sandy Twilight Zone is honestly what it feels like to me. Because so many of the things that she has said before apparently don't apply now that Malia is the bosun.
Right.
And it doesn't make any sense to me. And it's confusing. And it's disturbing. And that's where we all are right now with this is like, it's not a surprise if somebody lets you down if they have had perpetually shitty behavior. They can't let you down because your expectation of them is already you're a shithead. I expect this from you. Let's move on. You know, but to have somebody like Sandy, who at times has been so extremely thoughtful and caring and sympathetic, and compassionate, to have that go completely out the door and be now because of one person. I don't know if that's because she's over it. I don't know if that's because she is just tired of the situation. I don't know, but it's an entirely different Sandy that we're looking at. And I have said a multitude of times, publicly and privately with some of my colleagues, that Sandy is somebody that I would like to work for. I cannot say that anymore. I cannot say that and mean it anymore because of what I'm seeing in front of me. And again, they're not telling her what to say. They're not telling her what to do. If you look like an asshole, it's because you're an asshole.
Yeah. You can't take that out of context enough for me to think like to think there's another side to it.
Right.
Yeah, but she could be going through something,
I'm just as disappointed as you guys are. If you're asking my opinion, I'm just as disappointed and flabbergasted as you guys.
So when you look back at your time on Below Deck, what are your feelings about that now?
I'm glad that I did it because I don't have any what ifs. You know, there's a lot of opportunities in life where you can take one road or the other. And I'm glad that I did it because I don't have any of those what ifs hanging over me.
Right.
The actual filming process was torture. It was brutal. I cried an average of every other day and you never see that. Yeah, I think you see me cry on my season one time. And there's a lot behind that, but it was extremely stressful considering the fact that I had spent 3.5 years building that thing before we got to that point, you know, and I had invested so much personal time and energy without pay, by the way, just because I believed in the idea to get myself beat up even off camera by people who owned companies in Fort Lauderdale that thought that I was going to ruin the yachting industry. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a really, really hard uphill battle, and nobody else but me had to do that. And looking back on it now, mm-hmm. I'm grateful that people are rewatching my season because now they have context to understand where I was and what mm-hmm. the job requires.
Right.
At the very first time of anything, you're learning. Everybody's learning at the same right. time. Right. And when I talk to people, they're like, oh, Below Deck, oh, you're on that show. Like, this just happened with the people that I'm in contract to buy a house with. They're like, oh, you're on that show. We should watch it. And the very first thing I say is, I'm not as bitchy as I look on television.
That's funny.
What I say to everybody, because I come across extremely inflexible and very somewhat unrelatable. I mean, anybody who's ever managed anybody ever watches it and goes, those chicks just weren't there to do a job. They were there to fornicate and get drunk all the time, but whatever. But I'm grateful that people, fans, are watching the show again, because I feel like watching it, like you said, with new eyes gives it different context, because now you see the struggles that Hannah has gone through with Stews. You see the struggles that Kate has gone through with Stews. Right. So it makes it with Jenna, you know what I mean? All of us. Mm-hmm. Now you see what the program is
right.
to understand what the frustration is. And right. I'm grateful for the people that have reached out to me on social media and said, mm-hmm. I'm sorry I judged you so harshly because I didn't know. And mm-hmm. I said this the very first episode, the very first season, when I sat down with Kat and Sam for the very first time, mm-hmm. one of my phrases to them was, you don't know what you don't know. And I can't tell you how prolific that was right. going forward.
Right.
So for me, the actual filming process was a nightmare, but mm-hmm. everything that's happened as a result of it since then, my career hasn't suffered. I mm-hmm. stay busy as shit all the time mm-hmm. because I've been here for a long time and I'm good at what I do. I stay very busy, which I'm grateful for. But I've also had an amazing ability to network and become an advocate for people in my industry that are suffering from things like sexual harassment and mm-hmm. being stuck on a shitty boat with a shitty captain and a shitty owner, you know, like helping yeah. people through yeah. situations and getting them work as well. Mm, and I don't great. Do it because it makes me money. I do it because it's good karma.
Yeah. Right.
Aww. You know, it's just because I have a platform and people know me.
Right.
So I'm happy to
Would you do it
help.
Again? Would you do that again, Adrian? Would you go back on Below Deck if they asked you?
Would I do it the first time again?
No, would you do it now? Would again? You do it again now?
With all your knowledge no. that you've built up no. since then, you wouldn't? Yeah.
No.
I don't think I would.
I don't either. Believe that they would give me a fair shake. Mm-hmm. I don't, even with all of the time passed, I don't believe that they would give me a fair shake mm-hmm. because they've already invested in the Adrian's a bitch
right.
thing. And if I came back and tried not to be a bitch to the best of my ability, they would still be like, but this is what we told you you were the first time.
Yeah.
So
what are
I'm not saying that. Mm-hmm. My season is the last time that you'll see me on TV, but probably mm-hmm. not in that capacity.
That was going to be my next question. So what kind of plans do you have? I don't want you to give any development ideas to anybody else, but, you know, do you see yourself staying in the industry? Do you see yourself moving in a different direction? Where are you headed?
There's always different things. I'm one of those people that if people ask me what my 5-year plan is, I don't have an idea.
Right.
Because if I had made goals and stuck with them, I never would have ended up here talking to you guys about this.
Uh-huh.
Exactly. You know, I never would have been open to the opportunity of doing a show. I have teased the idea of doing something like a travel show that's kind of like Bourdain in a bikini Ooh. Type idea, which would be funny. Super fun. Because I love travel and I love eating and I love Anthony Bourdain. And
you look
I
good in a bikini, eat. Let's be real.
Yeah.
So,
amen.
thank you. That's flattering. Thank you. I mean, all of those things, you know, mm-hmm. I've teased the idea of doing that. And there's always other things that people are putting in front of me because of the opportunity I've already had. So that's why I can say, looking back, it's not entirely a negative. It's just the mm-hmm. filming process. It was that was an absolute shit show and a nightmare. Mm-hmm. And so I'm grateful. And honestly, professionally speaking, the show didn't hurt me because I don't know a single chief stew on an actual yacht off of TV that isn't some kind of a bitch sometimes. Because that's part of the job.
Right.
You're required to uphold standards. And sometimes you have to be bitchy to accomplish that.
I think
that,
that's management, period. I think there are times when you have to, the buck has to stop with you, and you have to be the jerk that says, no, you don't get to go out drinking. You have to clean that toilet or whatever. Right.
And like Leah McSweeney of Real Housewives of New York, you know, she owns that company, Married to the Mom. I just bought one of her sweatshirts, and it literally says, don't be scared to be a bitch. And I think it's really important that we not be scared to be a bitch.
Agreed. I said this in one of my, I can't remember if it was on Twitter or on Reddit. Somebody called me a bitch and I was like, and if I was a man, you would have called me assertive.
Right.
I'll take that.
Yep.
You know, because it's true and it's unfair, but at the same time, I'm still going to own it. Like I know that that was the most stressful 6.5 weeks of my life.
Right.
Hands down to date. Probably will never go through something that stressful, at least I hope not, ever again. Because I was so invested in making sure that my career didn't look like Jersey Shore on a boat. I had been involved for so long that it mattered to me that the representation that my friends and my family saw of my career for the last 8 years on the planet wasn't just a royal drunken monkey show. It mattered to me. And that comes across in my attitudes, my attitude on the show, because I really did give a shit. I really did care. And I really did want to do a good job. And even though that job is not my normal job, I wanted to do that job to the best of my ability.
Right.
And it was frustrating. And they knew that they gave me not a lot to work with. Mm-hmm. And they played that up and they didn't have to do anything. My season, I don't know what it's like now because I'm not filming the show now, but my season, they had just enough time to turn on the cameras and run after us. They didn't produce us. They didn't tell us what to say or what to do. They missed so much content because they didn't know what they were doing. There were so many other things that there were so many times when Ben and I were just in tears laughing because our witty humor worked so well off of each other. There was so many times when I had great conversations with Lee that just wasn't important to them or they missed it. Yeah. Like they didn't have their shit together. They did not have their poop in a group enough to get all the footage.
Hilarious. Yeah. And you've got to take that one on.
That
Dan.
Is,
for
I'm
you.
Stealing that one.
That
I steal all the non-swears.
You love it.
That's funny. Yeah. That's but so real fun, quick, yeah. Thank you. I just want to say thank you so much for clarifying a lot of the questions that we had spending this time with us. I love your perspective, you know, from having been on the show and now being a fan of the show. Can you let people know your contact, how they can, you know?
Should they follow you on social media and do you have any projects that they should look out for?
Yeah, of course. So my social media, Instagram, Facebook, and Reddit, all of them are the same thing. It's just at Adrian Gang. And yeah, so you guys will probably put that on your podcast link, but
definitely
at Adrian Gang. It's all the same thing. I'm lucky that there's only one of me. So I got all the things.
Yeah.
And going forward, so we haven't talked about it, but I got married a couple of years ago and
congratulations.
Actually today we put a deposit down on a house, which is
cool.
Very exciting. And, I fully intend to begin a transition to land this year once our house is built and start doing cooking classes and, boutique catering. I'm based in Tampa. And so I have a few clients here already and I'm looking forward to actually being home. So one of the cool things about, I know that's not usually a phrase that's associated with what I'm going to say next, but one of the cool things about the COVID lockdown is that I actually got to hang out with my husband because I'm gone so much. I'm home an average of 4 or 5 days a month, the end. Mm-hmm. And, so being home for the COVID lockdown was pretty cool because I got to hang out with my husband for like 2.5 months months, which in the time that we've known each other, it's the longest time we've seen each other consistently.
Wow.
And it turns out he's a really nice guy. So that's cool.
Good thing since you married him and all.
Exactly. Yeah. So I'm actually looking forward to spending more time on land once we have this house and I have a home base, and I'm going to turn that kitchen into my studio and start doing cooking classes and homesteading classes. You know, a lot of people during this pandemic realized that there was a lot of really primary life skills that they have not learned or been taught. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of a gap that I'd like to fill, to teach people how to cook whatever they want to learn how to cook, and to bring them into my home and have cooking classes or do a podcast. And so, yeah, I'm super excited about it. Once we get this house built, it's game on. I'm ready.
So everyone should definitely look out for that. Follow Adrienne on social media.
And don't you have a birthday coming up?
Thursday. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I think that everybody on Thursday needs to follow Adrienne on Twitter and send her a happy birthday message.
I agree. So.
Oh, let's see. There you go. This 37. Yay.
Woo! Yay!
Woo-hoo! Great age. Cool. Well, thanks to everybody for joining us. I really appreciate you coming by, Adrienne, and explaining all of this to us. And if anyone out there like this as much as we do, please head on over to Apple Podcasts, give us a review, give us a rating, and we would really appreciate that. So I hope everyone has a great week, and we will see you back here next time. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Thank you.